You're listening to Asia First Weekend Edition, me, Justine Moss. A very good morning to you. Crossing now, as usual, to our US Bureau Chief, Simon Marks, in Washington, D.C. And Simon, a busy week since we last spoke. How are you?
Absolutely, I'm good, but we're into the final stretch, Justine.
We are indeed. And let's just talk about the latest on the campaign trail. Of course, they've had their another duel in Florida. Campaigning now in the Midwest, a final push before Tuesday's election.
Yeah, absolutely. A major push in the battleground states where the candidates believe they need to do a bit more work to try and make their case and get their vote out. So both Joe Biden and Donald Trump were in Michigan and Wisconsin today. And then Joe Biden found himself in Iowa and Donald Trump headed to Minnesota. And it's going to be the pattern for the next 4 days. 4 days left until Election Day, what we quaintly still call Election Day, even though clearly the number of early voters suggests that more than half the public has now cast their ballots in this election. And in many ways, I suppose, Tuesday simply becomes the day the election ends. I mean, there are one has to wonder who's going to be left to show up and vote on Tuesday. I mean, I think it'll be a little bit like going to the department store on Christmas Eve. It'll be the procrastinators and the stragglers only, because everybody else by then will have voted. So we're going to see this weekend the traditional kind of hell for leather race for the finishing line, with Donald Trump still trying to claw back the advantage that Joe Biden enjoys in the polls. And again this week we've seen national polls, at least one of them, indicating that Joe Biden's lead was growing over Donald Trump, although in those all-important battleground states, Joe Biden's advantage in some of them has been narrowing. That's one reason why he decided to campaign in Minnesota. The Democrats thought that they had that all locked up, but they decided it was worth deploying him there one last time. He's going to have star power with him on the campaign trail this weekend. Barack Obama and Joe Biden will be appearing together for the first time on the campaign trail, in a move that the Biden campaign managers clearly hope is going to energize those Democrats who so far have sat on their hands. There is a report that has been published by Bloomberg here tonight saying that within the campaign there is concern about in the early voting turnout for Joe Biden of Latino and African American voters. So I think we may see an intensity of focus over the next final days to try and get them to the polls. And Barack Obama certainly, I think, will be reaching out to some of those minority communities and to grassroots Democrats more generally and urging them to get Joe Biden over the line. Democrats are absolutely terrified of the possibility of a repeat of 2016. Where Hillary Clinton, of course, won the popular vote. She won 3 million votes more than Donald Trump, but she ended up winning those votes in the wrong places. So she lost the election in the Electoral College. Donald Trump, for his part, has been barnstorming the battlegrounds. He announced today that he's going to do 17 rallies in the last 3 days of the campaign. And he's also thinking about campaigning on Election Day itself, next Tuesday, which would be an unusual thing to do. Not unprecedented, but it's certainly unusual. The odd thing about watching these Donald Trump rallies, and I've watched hours of them this week, is that he's still not at all focused or disciplined in terms of going after Joe Biden on the details of the Democrats' actual policies. So we hear a lot of talk about Joe Biden's mind is shot. He doesn't have the mental acuity to be president of the United States. He's not only going to keep your schools shut, he's going to take away your weddings. He's going to stop you from having fireworks displays on July the 4th. He's a corrupt businessman who's been paid off by China. You know, all sorts of claims for which there is simply no substantiation whatsoever. The ongoing claim that Joe Joe Biden is controlled by Marxist revolutionaries who are waiting in the wings, poised to come in and destroy American life as soon as Joe Biden wins the keys to the Oval Office. And at times, even here on Friday, once again, spending valuable time on the campaign trail talking about Hillary Clinton's emails. I mean, an issue for which not a single undecided voter is going to be expressing any concern whatsoever. And it's a mystery. And, you know, at the end of this election, one of these candidates is going to have lost and will face an inquiry. And if it's Donald Trump, I think Republicans will be wondering what might have happened had he taken the whole process of this election more seriously and in a much more structured way, taken apart the real policies that the Democrats are espousing on this campaign trail, which in many areas have got enormous holes in them and huge opportunities for Donald Trump to attack had he chosen to do so. Equally, if Joe Biden loses this campaign, I think there will be all sorts of questions about whether the Democrats made the right decision to keep him at home for so much of this campaign, you know, partly sheltering at home because of COVID-19, but also partly off the campaign trail because the Democrats believed that in the case of their candidate for American voters, less was more. I mean, Florida, where these two candidates are neck and neck, and where Joe Biden told supporters on Thursday, if we lose Florida, it's going to be very, very difficult for us to win this. It's going to complicate the path to the presidency. This is the critical state. We need to win it. Well, if he knows that, how come he didn't campaign there once as the Democratic Party's candidate until 6 weeks ago? I mean, it's been an odd strategy. So recriminations the morning after the night before, I think, are going to be inevitable for the losing candidate. But at the moment, they are both very much projecting the determination that they're going to be winners.
Simon, mail-in ballots, of course, have been, in the news. And now the Supreme Court has ruled on two states, longer deadlines for Pennsylvania and North Carolina. Talk more about those.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, this raises the specter, Justine, of what I suppose for many people will be the nightmare scenario here. I mean, traditionally, by the time CNA's election night special is over, which will be in the early hours of the afternoon, Singapore time on Wednesday, traditionally, we're able to tell you who the next president of the United States is going to be. We may not be able to do that this year because if the results are vaguely close in many of these battleground states, then those postal votes, and they're being posted in substantial numbers because of the pandemic, those postal votes are going to become critical. And if you look, for example, at North Carolina, which the Supreme Court ruled on today, there the court is saying that postal votes that arrive within 9 days of the election ending have to be counted, provided the envelopes are postmarked either on election day or before election day. So let's just say, for the sake of argument, that the election in North Carolina was evenly poised. I don't think it's going to be in that particular state, but if it was, and there were, you know, a couple of 100,000 votes separating the two candidates, and again, for the sake of argument, 500,000 postal votes out there, well, it could be 9 days before the last of those votes arrives to be counted. And then you can expect a massive legal argument with the campaigns deploying the armies of lawyers that they have already employed for this election to challenge postal votes that may or may not have been legitimately cast, may or may not have followed the process required to get a vote adequately and properly returned to the vote count. So this whole thing could stretch on for a very long time. And it was notable that today President Trump on Twitter seemed to send a bit of a message to the Supreme Court. Remember, three of the nine justices on the Supreme Court were appointed by President Donald Trump. Mm. And he warned them that if they adjudicated this election and determined that Joe Biden should be the next president of the United States, they needed to be aware that Joe Biden was going to pack the court with more judges. And he said those judges would be radical leftists. So Donald Trump evidently is preparing for the possibility of this thing going all the way to the Supreme Court if necessary. And imagine the instability that is going to create, not just inside America, but globally, if we do in fact have to wait for the outcome of this election. And not just wait for it, but wait for it essentially to be litigated and adjudicated. I think that is the nightmare scenario, but it's definitely one that you can't count out. And I can tell you today, in the center of Washington, all the shops and offices are being boarded up, even in my neighborhood. And I'm sort of, you know, 15 minutes drive north of the White House. Shops and offices are being boarded up again amid fears that there could be protests. And the protests could come from either side, Trump supporters or Biden supporters, over how long it might take to announce the result of this election. So, you know, we might see in time-honored fashion a result being declared quickly and efficiently within hours of the votes beginning to be counted. But it's perfectly possible that this is going to go on for a while. And this time next week, when you and I speak for the weekend programs, we may still not know the outcome.
You're listening to Asia First Weekend Edition. Me, Justine Moss, speaking to our US Bureau Chief, Simon Marks, in Washington, D.C. Simon, you just mentioned the possible protests and shops being boarded up. Just talk quickly about Walmart, of course, you know, the nation's biggest retailer, returning guns and ammunition to its store floors now, having taken it away a day earlier, pulled firearms and ammo.
Yeah, they did a complete 180 today, Friday, here in the United States. Yesterday, Walmart announced they were concerned about the possibility of social unrest. They were concerned about the possibility of looters breaking into their stores. So they took all of their guns and ammunition off public display. They were still making them available for sale, but you had to ask for them, and they weren't putting them in showcases and that kind of thing so that anybody could wander into the store, smash some glass, and make off with weaponry in the case of political protests here. Walmart shares took a hammering on Wall Street on that news. And today, Friday, Walmart announced that, in fact, they were putting the guns and the ammunition back on public display. I mean, again, without wanting to be alarmist about where things may be heading here, we do know that there's been a big surge in the sale of guns and weaponry in the United States over the last 2 or 3 months. I mean, some of that is undoubtedly driven by the violence in American cities like Portland and Kenosha in Wisconsin and Chicago and other locations. But a lot of it is also driven by just this enormous sense of anxiety about where this electoral process is heading. I mean, there is, you know, there is evidence, there are studies that show that this election is taking quite a psychological toll on Americans, regardless of their political viewpoint. Just the uncertainty and the tension that's in the air is putting people very much on edge.
And Simon, you mentioned briefly Walmart's, you know, stock. Of course, the markets have ended for the evening in the US, and not a great week for the tech stocks.
No, not a great week. Let me tell you about the trading day Friday. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed down 157 points. That's about 0.6 percentage points in value. The S&P 500 down 1.25 percentage points in value. And the Nasdaq took a hammering, down nearly 2.5 percentage points in value, off 274 points after a big sell-off in shares in Twitter and Apple, both of which offered up some pretty disappointing results to the market. But the biggest break on the market, well, is first of all, of course, the instability and uncertainty about the election campaign and where it's heading. But the markets are also being driven downwards by the rising tide in COVID-19 numbers here. More than 9 million infections now recorded in the United States. Another record day for new infections, a week that has seen records being set for new hospitalizations and rising numbers of deaths in some states. For example, Utah, the governor has warned that 85% of intensive care unit beds are already spoken for. And, you know, while President Trump insists the country is rounding the turn, there's absolutely no evidence to support that whatsoever. We are heading into the teeth of a major second wave here. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the nation's most respected public health official, warning this week that the track that the country is on currently is untenable. And that, of course, is going to have a massive economic impact. And, you know, much as the markets were buoyed by those GDP figures that came out this week, 33.1% increase in GDP, a record number that President Trump was able to point to on the campaign trail. He says proof that the country is experiencing a super V recovery. It is the fear that this fresh wave of COVID-19 is going to make that impossible, coupled with an understanding that France and Belgium both have now engaged once again in national lockdowns that are going to remain in place for several weeks. I mean, the writing's on the wall here for what has already been acted upon in Europe, and that is having a big impact on the markets.
Simon, always good to talk to you, and thank you so much for talking to us from Washington, D.C., and keeping us updated on what's happening over there, and looking forward to talking again tomorrow. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Justine. Talk to you tomorrow.